Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And we are here, we are alive, and we're ready to rock. How are you, Wei?
Doing well, John. Yourself?
I'm doing great.
Enjoyed that news pack. Thank you.
It was. It was a packed news edition talking about WrestleMania looks to be earmarked for Saudi Arabia. And we have news about the will of Hulk Hogan and the forthcoming documentary from Bubba the Love Sponge. We talk about Cody Rhodes set up for WrestlePalooza, NXT Homecoming, Ozawa out of the N1 victory, and the main event, Mark Shapiro at the Goldman Sachs Communicopia and Technology Conference. When I saw this headline, Wei, I didn't have a jolt of excitement. What went through my mind was,
at the core, they're about emotional transportation.
Emotional transportation. That's what,
of course,
was conveyed with this news.
A gold mine of additions to the soundboard coming out of this wonderful piece of speech, whatever you want to call it from him. Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to someone like auto-tuning Mark Shapiro. I think that could be the next the next bastion of entertainment. All right. Well, folks, you can always stay on board and catch up on all the news by becoming a member of the Post Wrestling Cafe. We get the whole news out of the way at the start of all of our weekly shows. And for cafe members, we are going to be back on Thursday. It's time to open up the mailbag, Wei.
Ask away. That's right. Yeah, the first time in quite a while, actually, we've done one of these. So we have a lot of questions to get to. This is our monthly, well, I would say at this point, bi-monthly place where we can answer all of our patrons' questions about really anything and everything. So topics and debate ranging about a variety of topics, some wrestling, some not wrestling. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's always fun to go through the mailbag. There's a lot of questions this month. You still have time to get yours in at forum.postwrestling.com or memo.fm/postwrestling. We love to hear your voices. Not mandatory, but it is free of charge to send us a voice memo. So that's coming out on Thursday. And then into the weekend we go. We got Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course with Bruce Lord and Kate from Montreal. Also dropping on Saturday will be Davey Portman with the Cubs fan as they review Worlds Collide, taking place the night before in Las Vegas with El Hijo del Vikingo against Dominic Mysterio in the main event for the Mega Championship and on the eve of Canelo Alvarez and Terrence Crawford.
I'm looking forward to hearing the Cubs fan. This is quite a big deal. I don't know if he's done much podcasting in the past. So we're very happy to have him. And thank you, Davey, for providing us with that show.
And your weekend caps off with the return of the NWA podcast on Sunday night. So look out for that show. And today, dropping Pollock and Thurston, myself and Brandon, going through the Bubba the Love Sponge response. A really interesting series of interviews Bryan Danielson conducted talking about WWE's counter-programming strategy and that corporations are not people, and getting into the mindset of why TKO is being so aggressive against WWE and the impact that AJ Lee had on that SmackDown number on Friday, as well as her YouTube numbers, which have been insane. That return clip on Friday has done over 5 million views. I think her Raw segment is like at 2.5. I mean, her return has been a big deal, and I think that she deserves a lot of the credit for that SmackDown number doing as well as it did on Friday against an NFL game that was airing on YouTube.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I would have never have thought that she would essentially be another version of her husband. And at least in drawing power, you know, and I think it'll probably speak a lot to how much you'll be seeing her and the plans that they might have for her going forward.
All right, we're going to move on over to the final week of the residency at the 2300 Arena. They will tape Collision on Thursday night, and that will be the conclusion of the Philadelphia run before they make their way over to London, Ontario next week for September to Remember.
Mm-hmm.
Which promotion took the better ECW name or an ode to an ECW name between AEW and WWE? We have WrestlePalooza and the former November to Remember.
I would say AEW. Yeah.
The better one. Tonight's number is going to be interesting because Dynamite, you know, it did like an all-time low last week. And this week, while sports was not a big thing tonight, this murder of Charlie Kirk, I have no doubt, is going to be like all of the coverage of all of your news outlets, and like that has been a massive story today, and I do imagine like news coverage is going to probably be pretty inflated tonight, and that could be a factor in things tonight. We will see when the numbers come out, but it was a sellout once again at the 2300 Arena, a regular number of 916, and out to start the show is Bryan Danielson, the newest member of the AEW commentary team, who revealed during this extensive tour of Australia that he told Perio Magazine that he got a text message asking him, "Hey, so you're going to be at Dynamite this week, right?" And his response was, "Huh?" And that person sent him a tweet where Tony Khan had announced that he is the new member of the commentary team.
I don't know if I fully believe that sequence of events, meaning, I mean, I'm sure this.
You think something was lost in, like, this is Bryan Danielson that I wonder how attached this man is to his communication. I have a hard time imagining this one, that they made him not just you're doing commentary on Wednesday, you are a full-time member of the commentary team.
You're traveling once a week to these events now, you know, which is a huge disruption to somebody's life, right? So, like, I feel like one of the reasons why he didn't want to continue wrestling in the first place was the weekly travel. And so I have to think that, you know, discussions were taking place beforehand. And
he did say him and Khan have talked about this before, but said that he didn't know it was a real thing until Sunday.
Okay.
That's according to Danielson. Mm-hmm. I've professed, I've really enjoyed this guy on commentary. I wouldn't say tonight was the smoothest transition. It felt like at times that he was kind of navigating his spot, playing off of Taz, like they're both the color guys. And to me, it just felt a little bit like Danielson was still kind of getting his feet wet in this role, even though it's one that we have heard him in many guest spots before. Like, he was fine. I didn't think there was anything negative about it, but I wouldn't say I had the same takeaway like I have hearing him in the past on shows.
I agree with that. Yeah, I was certainly interested to hear tonight how he gelled with Taz, since they both very much play the role of technical analyst.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Taz is also, like, other than that, like they're very different, you know, in tone. Taz is obviously a lot more joking, and Danielson, like, he's chosen to be much more serious. You know, even in talking about a Nigel McGuinness, he opts to essentially like play the more realistic, almost like. He there's not much of a gimmick there, you know, with him. So I feel like Bryan will continue to be more serious, and I think it'll either make Taz more serious or it'll push Taz more into being that much more of a comedy guy. So I wonder what sort of dynamic they'll have. They sounded okay. Like, I would say it's fine. They sounded fine together here, but I think there's still a chemistry to be built between those two in particular.
Well, they really eased Danielson into like his bread and butter here by having a match where he had to attempt to describe getting stapled in your tits and mouse traps. I mean,
that was probably the most like out of his element he sounded calling that type of match, you know, like a type of match he clearly does not watch or consume in his own sort of personal, you know, intake of pro wrestling.
Yeah, that's not on the his wrestling playlist. Hardcore matches.
Yeah, I wonder.
Hangman Page and Josh Alexander started the show, this being a rematch from Josh Alexander's debut in the Owen Hart Cup back in April. And very strong match to start off the show. We saw Page get caught with a strike from the floor during a pescado and then took a brainbuster onto the apron from the floor. But Page comes back. Crowd is going wild for him. Very lively crowd on tonight's show. They discussed the attack on Kenny Omega and how he's still under observation, but he's not away, right? He's basically here. He's basically working here on TV, even though he's under observation. He's not taking time off, is what I'm trying to say. Is okay. He's as good as here. He's still contributing. I mean, there's nothing that is not being done because of this attack. Yeah. So Page hits a Death Valley driver. The buckshot gets countered, and Josh Alexander starts a series of rolling Germans where he hits two in the ring, holds on. This is where Danielson notes that Josh has some of the best Germans because of his grip in the entire company. And that's the insight I want from Brian Danielson. They make their way to the edge of the apron where Josh hits a third German, and then they go to the floor. And I'm just thinking, please don't German this guy on his goddamn neck on the floor. And Page lands on his feet to prevent the fourth German. It's like, oh, thankfully no one got dropped on their head. And then he hits Josh with an exploder and he comes right down on his neck. And this was the most genuine reaction Brian Danielson had on the whole show, as he just freaked out at this guy landing on his neck and the vertebrae being compressed. The same thing that happened to me. Took us right into the match. So they get back into the ring. Josh gets hit with a pop-up power bomb, and then there's a rolling senton off the buckle by Alexander. He puts on the toe hold, and Page makes it to the rope. There's a dead eye on the edge, and he hits the Orihara moonsault, rolls Josh in for the buckshot, but Lance Archer gets involved, preventing the move. Then he back body drops Rocky Romero onto Lance, forearms Josh, hits the buckshot, and Page gets the win. As Danielson says, there is no physical revenge that can bring your friend back. It's like, if you wouldn't have been any the wiser, you would have thought that the Don Callis family had like killed Kenny Omega last week based on that line. Can't bring your friend back. But I thought a really, really strong match to start off the show, the dual grudge match.
I thought it was a hell of a match. Yeah, it was great to finally get this sort of showcase for Josh Alexander. I think, you know, he has become a very fitting addition to AEW and AEW style. He really just... he's a perfect fit for this promotion. But he has not been a guy who has been any sort of featured player since he's been here. I would even suggest he's not really been at the level of a Speedball in terms of like just exposure and presence, you know. So it was great to see this. He got that great promo on Saturday, and they followed it up with this like pay-per-view level match on TV against the world champion. So this was, to me, the type of match and the type of performance where like you want to see Alexander get a bigger push coming out of it despite the loss. You know, I thought it showcased his strength. Great, almost perfect technical wrestling. Great aggression here. So let's see what they could do with him after this. Page is certainly not taking it easy with these TV matches, man.
Like, he doesn't in any of his TV matches.
Oh my God. There was a lot of risk in this one. I mean, risk to both men. That T-bone into the fence, that big fireman's carry senton from the top rope. I would even say, like, every time I see him do an Arihara moonsault, I'm very nervous because this company could not use another injury. And I don't think any fans would be blaming him one bit if this, you know, if they knocked a star off or two even from these sort of TV matches. But he performed this like it was a pay-per-view level match, which, again, is the thing that is setting this company apart from the competition. The fact that they're delivering, like, this sort of very high in-ring quality week in, week out.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to. It would just be such a blow if this guy were to get hurt at this particular moment. Like, any time it would be bad, but I mean, it's a reality when you're especially watching this company, and especially at this moment where they've suffered some really big injury, just this injury rash, and they've had many of those throughout the company's. Like, there is like that when it rains, it pours sometimes. But nonetheless, very, very solid match here between these two. And Paige says that the most important word in AEW is wrestling. He is the men's world champion and calls out Kyle Fletcher. And Kyle Fletcher comes out and says that the Don Callis family run AEW. He challenged Paige on Collision and wants an answer. So Paige tells him to come into the ring, look into my eyes like a man, and says the whole crowd gets on him chanting, "Where's your socks?" And Paige says, "You have potential."
Well, what do you think of this look?
This look or this chant?
Well, like the no socks or the ankle socks.
I mean, you could certainly be it could be very irritating not having socks. Like, there's a purpose to having socks.
He might have like the
it's the Gunther look.
Well, it might be the very low socks.
It could be. But I mean, like, that's like sub ankle level socks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
not for you.
I think there's a real like blister concern. But I'm glad this was incorporated. Could have been the stipulation in the match.
It kind of is his thing now. It's his bald thing, you know? So I mean, I'm sure he'll run with it.
Huh. Are you going for that? Okay.
No, not even.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Wei answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com. So Paige works it into the promo stating, you know, you've got all the potential in the world and you can't even put socks on. And that got
great ad lib
pop. It was. He did play off it well and says, "You're built like a brick shit house. And when I look at you, I see myself 6 years ago standing across the ring from Chris Jericho, full of potential, but you're not ready." And Fletcher informs him, "I'm 26. I decide when my prime is, and it's right now. I'm ready to carry this company and be world champion." So Paige agrees to the match at All Out, but There is something he needs from him, and the crowd chants socks. And he needs Kyle to do it by himself, leave the Don Callis family behind, find some socks, and says that, Kyle, you don't need anyone. Or Kyle says that he doesn't need anyone to beat Hangman, and he gives his word that this will be man on man at All Out, and unlike you, I'm not going to fail like you did 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I like that story. I like the, you know, the idea of like Paige facing a version of himself, you know, somebody who's on the come up, and now Paige is in the role of a Chris Jericho, the veteran who is there to tell the up and comer that he's not ready yet. I like that way, the way that they're trying to, you know, at least sell us on the idea of this being a pay-per-view level main event.
Does this mean Hangman might go out after celebrating and lose the title after this defense in Toronto?
After a little bit of bubbly?
Yeah, he gets, you know, maybe. He loses it at like somewhere on like King Street. loses it at Gabby's.
It's very possible, yeah. But as like a first face-to-face interaction between the two, I thought it was good, very strong. You know, Fletcher being in this sort of like spotlight, he stepped up and certainly doesn't feel out of place as a promo in the main event role. And when we're strictly talking about talent, I think the only thing he's missing is tenure in the audience's minds in this sort of space. And I think that's what they're trying to build with him right now with this. So win or lose, I think being billed as a world title competitor will boost the profile in ring. I certainly think it has the potential to be the best match on the show.
I think this could be the best match of that day. I think like this, yeah. I'm really looking forward to this match. And all that said, like I don't have the feeling of this being like a big pay-per-view for AEW.
It's missing the star power, and that's what I mean by the tenure. You know, Kyle Fletcher is brand new. He's like, he's just been slotted as your mid-tier champion right now, and he's barely been established as that. So to put him presumably in the main event of this show,
I think this has to be the main event.
And I think so too.
I talked about this with Kate, is that you're going into this where there's already going to be the thought, is Kyle Fletcher big enough for this role? And whether your answer is yes or no, there's going to be that thought. And I think that's all the more important that this cannot be second from the top, because it only confirms that notion that this is not a strong enough challenger. I think it's very important that these two headline this show. And I don't have a concern in the world that these two cannot follow what will precede them on that show. Like this could very well be the match of either show on the 20th.
Yeah. In terms of billing, like I imagine you're going to get as much promotion for Edge and Christian versus FTR as you would any other match.
Like, which you should. That, like, especially in Toronto, that should be pushed really hard. But I think just from an optic standpoint, putting this on last would be the call I would make.
So what might be getting people into the building may not necessarily be Paige versus Fletcher, but I think ending the show on it after they're already in there is a great way to, again, feature your champion as the main event, you know, and also to boost Kyle Fletcher's profile. So, of course, promising Callis won't be around. Almost seemingly assures Callis will be involved in the main event, but
I mean, we have 100 guys in this group. I imagine they're all going to be spread out on this show, so I'm sure there will be plenty of Don Callis, which we also have not mentioned the fact that it looks like Wardlow is going to be out for an indeterminate period of time now with either a full tear or a partial tear of his pec, which was suffered in the return, which is just like, man, crazy. If this guy didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck at all. That's just brutal.
A bit of that you know, Adam Cole bad luck, you know, that's attached to him. I don't know, man, like barely even getting going and then having to like take that time off again. It just you know, what could you say? It's some guys don't get injured at all, and then other guys just are gone for years, it seems.
They showed MJF after his run-in on Collision Saturday night saying that my wedding was the night before. But he told his wife, there's no honeymoon until Mark Briscoe is dead. And his wife threatened to leave him. And his response was, you silly little bitch. I was already married before to this game, to hatred, and to vengeance. And I left my house with a smile. And I will accept any of your silly stipulations that you come up with. And I will say the same thing I did on my wedding night. I do. By God, I do.
Mm-hmm. So is he actually, like, is he separated from his wife in storyline? because he went and went to collision.
You know what? I didn't even think about that. And I wonder if that is in our next promo, if we will ever find, like, is the character of MJF divorced after 24 hours? I mean, it would kind of fit this guy's character that this that he left his wife after one night to go kill Mark Briscoe.
I'm curious to see, like, if they actually acknowledge on TV that Alicia is his wife, and or if, like, they still continue to
I don't think they would.
This very abusive, like, relationship with he and that interviewer on the show. But a very intense promo from MJF, and he makes it look so, you know, his ability on the mic to be this intense is so natural. It really feels like the wrestlers of the past. And yeah, this was, I thought, a fantastic promo.
I'm wondering if this is going to be a ladder match with the contract.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, it's a way to promise, like, a big violent match that, you know, Mark Briscoe has a history with the Ladder Wars, and you have this contract. I mean, kind of is...
Sure, it's there. At the same time, it...
There's also the rule you have to have a ladder match every month.
I guess, I don't know if that stipulation might give away the result, you know, just because I think we're still expecting MJF to face Hangman in the future, right? But I guess that's not guaranteed. And how do you get out of this with Mark Briscoe not losing again?
I don't know if he is losing this match. I don't know if it's a foregone conclusion. Like, you can still get to a rematch with Hangman, and it doesn't have to be immediate.
Right. Not if you do the whole contract thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I don't think it's an impossibility that they could just go with Mark Briscoe, and that's... That's probably a TV match. I mean, I think it's a tougher sell as a pay-per-view match, but I think it's something you could do. Then we go to Mercedes Moné and Emi Sakura against Riho and Alex Windsor. And Sakura applies this, like, double bow and arrow.
We had a little segment with the Bucks and Renee.
Sorry. Renee was with the Young Bucks earlier today in catering, and they're in a 10-man tag tonight where the winning team will each receive $100,000, and they are asked what they would do if they won, and they're rich again. If they got $100,000 each, and Matt says, we wouldn't be eating this food next week, and Nick, he's just going to put it all on the table and gamble it all to double his money if he wins. So they try to sit with the Dark Order, but the seats are all taken. They sit down with Brandon Cutler, who tells him to shut up and walks off, and John Moxley appears, and everyone jumps, and Moxley tells the Young Bucks that nothing has changed. They're still the best team in the world. All you have to do is show up, and if we win, you guys get $250,000 each. So the Death Riders are going to fork over their $300,000 so that the Bucks can get $250,000 each.
Well, that's very generous of them.
Very nice. Yeah.
I feel like the $100,000 was already enough motivation for them, but nice of, you know, Moxley to offer his and, I guess, Yuta and Claudio's share too. How do they feel about all this?
Well, you can't restore your finances off $100,000 each. I mean, you need $500,000 to get back to your previous lifestyle.
I would be fine with $100,000.
Okay.
But... I mean, I guess it does make sense that the Death Riders are not the money-motivated type, so I guess this makes things a bit more aligned with their characters and obviously increases the motivation. Like, I just like how, like, maybe in Tony's mind, $100,000, that's not enough. $250,000, that sounds a bit more reasonable.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's...
Because $100,000 to him, I could actually see being very inconsequential.
So Mercedes and Sakura against Riho and Alex Windsor. Windsor goes after Moné and then prevents a sharpshooter. So Riho hits a double stomp to Moné, who is draped on the top rope. And we see an assisted senton by Sakura onto Riho, the old Quebecers move. And then an SOS is hit by Sakura, or onto Sakura by Riho. Moné makes the save. And then we get to this finishing sequence. And Sakura and Riho... they were, like, way off here, just like in this transition. And Windsor goes to trap Moné in the ropes with the sharpshooter. I say for the sharpshooter because I'm doing my best to interpret what she was going for. The end result was this would have gotten the Bret Hart thumbs down if this was an attempt at a sharpshooter in the rope. She was just holding on for dear life to these legs that weren't even crossed. And then Riho does just this incredibly slow transition into the half crab as Sakura taps. So I thought this match was going along fine, but I just thought by the end of this, it was the double whammy of just a really poorly executed finishing sequence on all ends. And I just did not feel at the end of this match like you had really brought Riho up to feel like a competitive challenger for this pay-per-view that this match should have been able to hopefully give you with Riho.
I agree. I totally agree. Yes, something was up with like Riho and Sakura, first of all, with like a really bad-looking schoolboy, and then ending with that mess of a... Just, yeah. The crowd was very reactive, and I thought that really saved everything. You know, this was
a very easy crowd tonight, but
probably the best crowd they've had since being in the 2300 arena. But overall, it did not do enough to single out Riho to make her feel like a deserving pay-per-view level act. I mean, for one thing, I thought Windsor outshined her in the ring for the most part here, you know. Two, I think Riho was perfectly good. She stood out in year one of AEW, but AEW in 2025 demands much more like well-rounded wrestlers, people who can wrestle and who can talk and have great characters. And right now Riho checks only one of those boxes, and she's not even, to me, the best on her team on this evening. So, I mean, beyond, I think, you know, showing us something a bit more renewed in the ring, I think AEW could do a lot more to reintroduce the audience to her and to tell us why she's special, to accentuate the reason why she is, you know, somebody so respected, right? I think Riho herself could do a lot more to improve the non-wrestling aspects of her abilities because, I mean, in 6 years, like, I wouldn't say she's evolved at all since when we first saw her.
Yeah, it does feel to me kind of backwards the way we went, where I feel like Riho would have been a much more interesting setup opponent on TV to get to the Mercedes-Windsor match that we ended up getting last week, for instance. I think that would have been the stronger play for the pay-per-view because that's kind of what you had been setting up all this time. And just out of nowhere comes Riho. And like we're just a week and a half away from this pay-per-view. Like there isn't a whole lot of time left to build this up beyond just it's a match on the pay-per-view.
It's going to be a good match, presumably. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we have Renee with Ricochet and the Gates of Agony, who call the Hurt Syndicate cowards, and they ask for Shelton to leave MVP and Lashley in the back tonight. Ricochet will do the same, and that's a demand, which is their new hand signal and slogan that they cap this off with. That's a demand.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm.
Is it the new Too Sweet, you think? Think everybody will be doing this?
It has to be. Yeah.
Okay.
This is going to take the world by storm. So NXT Homecoming next week is going to have the biggest tag match in NXT history. AEW presents the most statistically significant tag team match of all time as we get a numbers video for FTR against Copeland and Cage with a Hockey Night in Canada inspired instrumental.
It wasn't inspired. I thought this was directly it. Like,
is this the actual one?
It was the same melody. If it was like a knockoff, I mean, I thought it was a knockoff. It was
myself.
A pretty blatant one.
Okay, well,
like, I mean, note for note, the same.
Okay, well, if they went all out for this, then good for them. FTR has 70 wins over 59 teams in AEW, the winningest team in 2025 with 2 AEW tag titles, 10 career title wins, while Copeland Cage, 7-time champions, 2-time TNT champions, 18 world titles between them, 58 title reigns between them. People say titles don't mean as much anymore. And 1 Emmy nomination, not Sakura. And this is the first time they will team in 14 years and the first time in 24 years that they have teamed in Toronto.
Those are a lot of numbers. Yeah. But I'm here for the Hockey Night in Canada music. I mean, this entire theme of this pay-per-view seems to be centered around the Leafs, you know, a blue and white color scheme.
Oh my gosh. How many hockey spots and stuff are we going to get in this match?
I mean, is it, it's not a no DQ.
I mean, it will be, even if it's not billed as one.
Yeah.
This is going to end in a DQ.
I don't know. I'm not sure. No, you are the hockey expert of us, you know.
Me?
So what could they possibly do to pay tribute to your favorite Toronto Maple Leafs?
Lose.
Could do that. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to honor the legacy, I mean, that's the one way for Copeland to return to the Scotiabank Arena. Big Stoke cuts us off by calling this video bullshit as the three enter and says this will be a fight. Stokely insults the crowd, saying they look like extras in Roseanne, and none of them are getting any hose. And Dax continues to do like his Dudley's gimmick, where he just is like ramming, just walking up to these fans, trying to get him to strike him, and then finally just knocks over a cameraman, and they just attack the production members.
Yeah, yeah, and they cut away to the camera when it was knocked on the floor. Clearly a message.
This guy never caught up. He just fell down and he was down for, he might still be there.
Clearly a message to Iotze.
I thought there was a message later on to Iotze. We'll get to
what was that.
The Hurt Syndicate are with Renee. Shelton says, I've got this. And he's going to leave his guys in the back if Ricochet does the same. So that takes us to Shelton and Ricochet.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
And we just got a million bald chants. And I am probably the most liberal when it comes to like chants, but even I was kind of feeling it after just every conceivable bald chant in this match. I mean, it kind of ran its course for me, but maybe I'm on my own.
I mean, I thought they were having fun, and
we're not here to have fun. Okay, we're here to watch.
Oh,
to watch, yes. This.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, get your chants outside. Okay, these are professional athletes that we're trying to watch here. Plus, we had bald Bryce involved in here too.
Yeah, so they chanted everyone's bald.
Yeah, yeah. During the commercial break, Taz noted, I just realized Shelton's bald too. And it sounded pretty genuine when he made this remark. Mm-hmm. So Ricochet starts off with a Fosbury and a springboard 450. Benjamin does this aggressive kick out, and Ricochet goes to rake the eyes, and Bryan Danielson says, that's not legal, but it is something Bryce will allow him to get away with, which is very apropos. He does. Mm-hmm. Benjamin catches a springboard, hits an exploder, hits a series of Germans. The crowd calls for a third one, so he does it. And then Ricochet scales to the top and just powers him over for a Spanish fly. And then out of nowhere, Ricochet grabs the scissors. The scissors. He's going to stab Shelton Benjamin, and Bryce is just like, hasn't made contact yet. I don't know what his intention is here. I can't judge intent. I can only judge what is actually done. So Shelton, saving his life, prevents the stabbing from occurring. Bryce is just like, no one's been hurt with the scissors yet. I cannot make an official ruling. The crowd just wants to see a dude stabbed as they chant ECW. And Shelton grabs the scissors and he breaks the scissors.
He did.
He breaks them in half. Mm-hmm. And then the gates of agony run down. The announcers are stating how this is violating the gentleman's agreement. I would argue that the gentleman's agreement ended when attempted murder was on the table. But no, it is Toa headbutting Shelton that violates this unspoken agreement. And Ricochet rolls him up for the win as Shelton loses. Lashley and MVP run out. And dude, they had a hell of a brawl. Like, they were just, if you were watching like Khan and Lashley, these guys were just going all out on one another here on the floor. This was a very heated brawl.
It was, yeah. I mean, I thought the match was fun, you know, thanks to the wrestlers, but thanks to the
crowd. I thought it was a good match. I could do without some of the chants, but hey, they had a good time. Who am I to judge?
Yeah, I mean, they were, I thought, creative with their chants. At one point, they were doing like they're spelling out baldy.
Let's go bald guys. Bald guys suck. We bald people.
B-A-L-D-I. E. Baldy. And Ricochet hears this and decides to implement it into his stomps, which the crowd, of course, chanted along to. So, I mean, I thought there was a lot of creativity, both with the crowd and also within the wrestlers as well. And, you know, ultimately, I mean, Shelton, to me, his transformation has been amazing. Like, in WWE, I always viewed him as this, like, sort of cruiserweight, agile guy. But in AEW, he wrestles like he's a giant, and I think he's also been very convincing in that role. So, that was fun to watch. But ultimately, this was a very WWE-style ending to the match.
We go to the rooftop, and there's Hook. He says that the ops replaced me for the trio's championships. But I understand it now after Joe explained it to me. I've been an athlete my whole life. I appreciate them having my back, but I need to stand on my own. Or maybe not.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this seemed to, I guess this seemed to tie up those loose ends with the ops for good. He seems to be done with them. He's not he's not going to turn heel on them. He's not even going to face them. He's staying a babyface. They're all staying babyfaces. But he's also indicating that he's going to partner with somebody else. So who do you think it'll be?
Okay, so watching this in the moment and, I mean, not knowing the end of this show, I thought this could, like, somehow tie into, like, a Death Riders thing at some point where he would be getting his revenge on the ops but doing it with, like, a new group of some sort.
Just
because they are pushing, like, this idea of, like, this next generation now of the Death Riders.
There's nothing about the promo that seemed to indicate that he's, you know, considering turning heel. You know, nor really anything from last week when he was fighting them.
I mean, the impetus here is that, like, he's been replaced and he's just, like, accepting of this, but
he's cool
deep
with
down.
It.
Well, or is he cool with it?
I guess I don't know if I read any sort of, like, ulterior motive to some of these words, nor do I find that much interest, honestly, if that was the case.
Well, is there a tag team that interests you with Hook either?
Not so much, but, you know, I'm also just trying to think who else is out there that might be a bit of a loose sort of wrestler that needs some sort of identity. Hook is somebody who, you know, there's a certain appeal to him, absolutely. I think these vignettes look really cool. The promos still need a whole lot of work. You know, he still really has to find his voice, still has to find his confidence. And I think he needs a great talker to still be with him right now. And I wonder if, like, an Eddie Kingston, you know, like two New Yorkers would find some sort of, like, chemistry, you know, with each other. But yeah, I don't know.
Shivani's in the back with Fletcher and Callis. Kyle assures Callis, "I've got this," and tells Don to trust him at All Out. So presumably they're promising you no run-ins at All Out, although we'll see if that is how it turns out. There is a gentleman's agreement that could be violated at any time. Philadelphia street fight between Tony Storm and Sky Blue. We didn't get the Sandman on this run of Philadelphia shows, but we got the closest thing to it because Tony Storm, after getting anointed by the Sandman and a signed kendo stick.
She anointed the Sandman.
Did she anoint him?
Yeah. She knighted him. She knighted him.
Okay. It's kind of backwards, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, she came out with a signed kendo stick from one Jim Fullington and did the full Sandman entrance, smashing her head. I guess if they did go out for the Hockey Night in Canada theme, there was nothing left for Metallica.
Oh, no. No.
So, cool entrance here. The crowd all got into it, and it did look cool here with, like, the Tony Storm, like, the red blood and the Tony Storm entrance combined with the Sandman.
Yeah.
Because when I saw the Sandman, I mean, this is a film noir influence, if there ever was one, that could be a perfect crossover. So Sky Blue comes out, and we just get into kind of our just weapons. The weapons are brought in a trash can by Tony Storm. This included a staple gun that Tony got stapled in her ass, got stapled in her tits, right between her legs. This is Blue then gets a VCR Danielson had no way to describe any of this as he was trying his best. So a VCR is included, as well as a VHS tape that is used as a weapon. And they zoom in on the VHS tape, which reads RJ City audition tape. Vinyl records are used, and then they fight on the barricade. Sky Blue has a fan sign that turns out to be have a street sign underneath it. And then Tony Storm reveals
the fan sign read like International Heartthrob or Generational Heartthrob Tony Schiavone. So you knew it had to be fake.
Okay. So Tony Storm reveals a table full of mouse traps, and it read, "I smell a rat." And see, I thought this was the reference to Scabby.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But I don't think it was. But and Tony Storm started eating like squares of cheese. So the crowd chanted, "We want cheese." And Sky Blue ends up powerbombing Tony off the apron onto the table full of mouse traps, and the table does not break, allowing Danielson to explain for us that when the table doesn't break, it hurts more. And I don't know if the idea was just this was going to break and this was going to be our big mouse trap spot, but this does not quite work out, nor did they go back to the mouse traps again.
No, but it got a reaction, you know, like the mouse traps going off. I'm sure actually it did hurt.
Well, Storm took another powerbomb onto a trash can, and Storm comes back with a chair shot after stopping the Code Blue, uses an electrified bug zapper. Don't get those every hardcore match. And then with a 2300 arena sign that was brought into the ring, it's placed onto Sky Blue, hit with the hip attack using the sign, and then a Storm Zero on the chair as Tony Storm gets the win.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought overall an entertaining hardcore match. The prop team were certainly having their fun here with a lot of this. But I would say of like the AEW variety of a women's street fight hardcore match, I think your expectations are something very violent, maybe even bloody. This, I would say, was more of a WWE variety where I think the props were much of the sort of appeal of it. But I mean, they also did get into some more sort of serious, like I would say, violent spots here, like with the mouse traps, certainly the staple guns. They did a lot here, you know. Not as intense overall as like prior street fights in the AEW women's division, but I would say still entertaining and of a more violent quality than maybe what you would get in the WWE.
Yeah, I can't say this did not work in the arena. The crowd got into a lot of like just all the various spots and weapons and stuff. But for me, it's the hardcore matches that rely on kind of like these punchlines for spots and props. It's just really not my personal preference, and that prevented me from really getting into this all that much. I mean, it was... I think an apt comparison is kind of your WWE hardcore match, where it's more about kind of just popping the audience with like comedic violence that was filled throughout this. Tekla and Julia Hart run in and attack. So that prompts Chris Statlander to run down, followed by Jamie Hayter. And Hayter goes to nail Julia Hart, but she ducks, so she takes out Statlander by mistake. Hayter gets tossed out of the ring, and then Tekla is left with Storm doing her spider pose into the spear and grabs the belt. I think Tekla is, if I don't necessarily sense a title change here, but I would not at all be opposed to them holding off on this for a singles match, maybe at the following pay-per-view. I think they really have something here in Tekla that... they're only scratching the surface here with Tony Storm. I think there could be a really good program coming out of this that you could really get kickstarted at All Out rather than conclude this.
Possible. Yeah. I also don't see a title change, but like, you know, could Tekla be the person to win it off of her at the next one? I think it's possible. Something tells me maybe like, I think Tekla still needs maybe a little bit of seasoning before I feel like she's ready to lead the division that way. Like, I would say to me, Hayter, I feel is more capable in that spot right now. Maybe even Statlander, I would say, at the moment. But those two kind of have their own other side stories going. At present moment, like, this does not feel like it's... a worthwhile, like, pay-per-view level match to me yet.
Both women's title matches feel like that. It feels as though, well, these are our title matches for the month. We haven't built up a challenger or challengers that are all that strong, and it's just we've got a pay-per-view and we need these titles defended. That's what both these matches feel like to me.
Yeah. Like, four ways by nature are already pretty impersonal, but like the way that like these competitors have just kind of been randomly chosen makes this feel even more like a TV level match rather than something for pay-per-view. Yes, they do have Collision and then Dynamite to potentially build up some story, but I can't imagine them doing much of a job in two episodes. So this feels like certainly a major step down from prior Toni Storm matches on pay-per-view.
Renee spoke to Willow Nightingale, who really wants to fight Marina Shafir. And before she can continue, Harley Cameron comes in and starts singing, playing the guitar. And Willow warns Harley about Chris Statlander and trusting her and just warns her to watch her back. And Willow leaves and Harley finishes her song with Renee.
Yeah. So I guess we have some indication of, you know, Willow's current thoughts on Chris Statlander. She still doesn't trust her, thinks she's working with the Death Riders. And the focus is now on Harley Cameron to see whether or not she could trust Statlander.
Well, I mean, if you are going to turn Chris Statlander, these are two female baby faces that you can gain a lot of sympathy off of. Either Harley Cameron just destroying her or finally getting the trust of Willow and then turning on her. That is another avenue to go. But I think we're still about a year and a half away from this Chris Statlander thing climaxing.
Yeah, I think they're going to tease it. I don't see her turning ultimately.
Collision on Saturday night. That'll be taped Thursday. We're getting a rematch from last week's show with FTR against Tommy Billington and Adam Priest, or as Danielson called him, the Dynamite Kid, which we might as well just call him the Dynamite Kid.
Well, what's his nickname? Isn't he? What is he?
I mean, he's Tommy Billington.
Doesn't he go by Dynamite something?
I don't think so.
He does not. He just goes by Tommy Billington.
Yes. Okay. Mark Briscoe.
Well, you just call him the Dynamite Kid.
Yeah, let's just pretend he is the Dynamite Kid.
Well, in Mexican wrestling, like you pass on monikers like that. Can we not call him like nephew of Dynamite Kid or Dynamite Kid 2? Can we not do that?
You could. The Dynamite's kid in law.
Is that the relation?
It's like a nephew. Isn't that the...
He's a nephew. Yeah.
Okay. Mark Briscoe will announce his stipulation and MJF will appear on the show. The newly single MJF in character.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, there's going to be a three-way at All Out for Okada's Unified Championship. And the winners of these three matches will enter the match. So Saturday's Collision will have Okada against Michael Oku and Konosuke Takeshita against Anthony Bowens. And then next week in London, Ontario, the Beast Mortos against Máscara Dorada. So it would seem that they're at least going to be dangling the idea.
It's going to be Michael Oku versus Anthony Bowens versus either Beast Mortos or Máscara Dorada.
That's kind of what I thought. I figured that the Unified Championship is going to change hands on Collision after all this time with Okada, the longest reigning champion in AEW. So, I mean, they could either just dangle this and somehow Takeshita gets eliminated here, or you don't exactly give away the singles match, but you do put Okada and Takeshita in the match, which is what I'm presuming is going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I'm expecting Okada versus Takeshita versus, can we assume Mortos? Like, as the AEW mainstay, although Dorada,
I'd flip a coin on this. I think it could be either one, but sure, it could be Beast Mortos.
Kind of feel like Mortos, just on paper, I think he means more to an AEW fan than Máscara Dorada, although both of those options would be amazing. But Okada, Takeshita, Mortos, you can't really complain so much about that. It does feel like a little bit of a cop-out because I personally want to see Okada versus Takeshita.
Are you right saying now that the bottom bracket is they are wrestling for the right to take the fall at All Out?
Pretty much.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah, who's going to be
this?
The,
is one of the more blatant ones of just, like, we need a fall guy.
But, I kind of take it back, Fletcher versus Paige certainly looks like it could be a match of the night, but this almost feels like it's going to have the highest chances of stealing the show, doesn't it?
It's going to have high expectations if you have Okada and Takeshita in there. It's going to be a very strong show. The question is going to be how well the show can perform. I think that's going to be the struggle of All Out.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Before we move on, I do have to correct you, John, because Dynamite Kid is the nickname of Tommy Billington.
Of the younger Tommy Billington?
Yeah, he has been billed as that on Dynamite, on AEW.
Okay, well then I stand corrected. Thank you, chat room. John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta, and the Young Bucks taking on Samoa Joe, Powerhouse Hobbs, Shibata, and Brodito with $500,000 at stake. The crowd were all over Wheeler Yuta, and all 10 enter the ring. The Bucks leave as King and Hobbs confront them. And then there's a dive by King, and Bandito hits a frog splash onto Claudio. Bandito went for the deadlift vertical onto Claudio, but he's yanked down by Yuta. And then as they go to picture-in-picture, there is a spot where Nick gets his leg pulled out from under him on the edge, and he just does like a headstand, spiking himself, and goes out. This was like the reverse of like the Ted DiBiase spot where he would go backward and pretty much go on top of his head, but this was going forward and to the floor. So they had the advantage on Bandito for a long time until he reaches Hobbs, and Shafir distracts Rick Knox as Yuta uses the chair to the back of Hobbs, no effect. And then Claudio goes for the giant swing onto Brody King. Is this the roughest giant swing that Claudio has ever performed?
I'm sure he's failed at this at some point, but it doesn't come to mind. It feels like this man pulls this off every single time on every single wrestler that he tries it on. This was not the night. He tried so hard.
And still just this one was not happening tonight with Brody King.
Has he ever done it to Brody King in the past? I don't know. But it was, total failure, unfortunately.
And so from there, Moxley's in with the paradigm shift to Joe. Hobbs hits a spinebuster on Moxley, super kick party on Shibata and Brody. And we get Bandito running in double Rana to the box, hits the X knee to Nick, but then goes for the 21-plex. But Nick is on the floor, holds on to Matt, preventing the 21-plex. He goes for a monkey flip as a follow-up to the 21-plex, and that's what gets blocked. And Nick assists Matt with his legs on the ropes, pinning Bandito, and the Young Bucks are $500,000 richer between their combined net worth from this match, and would presumably be facing Brodito at All Out, was the takeaway from this, as the two teams fought their way to the back as the Death Riders fought the Ops. And before we get to the rest of the post-match, how did you feel about the 5-on-5, $500,000 tag match?
I thought it was great. Yeah, a lot of fun. Honestly, I don't have a ton to say about these other than they're great. Like it's a lot easier to maybe pick apart like a match that actually sucks and actually has problems. But these matches featuring this group of guys rarely does. We mentioned the Cesaro swing that failed. That's about as much as you can criticize. Everything else I thought was really, really strong. Bandito, I think, continues to really steal the show in these sort of matches. I'm excited about potentially the Bucks versus Brodito. I think that's a very worthwhile match to put on the pay-per-view that would certainly elevate this card. And almost to me justifies Brodito winning that much more just so you could do this match on the pay-per-view.
So now the Young Bucks, maybe they can buy some stock in Aspiration and see if
what's Aspiration?
You should look it up. Aspiration, oh. LA Clippers.
Maybe they can buy stock in TKO. I hear it's doing quite well right now.
It's a high margin value, but they just doubled the dividend. In another era, it kind of would be funny if to have the Young Bucks investing in TKO stock, and that's the reason for they're rich off of TKO and their stock rising. Like, really, the storyline should have taken place 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, really. So my presumption is, okay, they win this money and they're going to just lose it all, like doing something really stupid, right? Because they can't be ending this gimmick just yet. You know,
no, like, I think they either lose it immediately or they just like invest it and they have more money than ever after this. I mean, this is the Baron Corbin angle.
Well, nobody wants to see them be rich. We just saw that, right? We want to see them even more broke and even more debt than before.
What if they do a vignette? They go out onto the streets of London, Ontario, and see how much their American money can take them in London.
Quite far. Yeah.
So
the exchange rate is awful.
They brawl to the back with Brodito, and Darby Allin races down as the ops are being attacked by the Death Riders, and Darby jumps on Moxley when a mysterious man in a hoodie enters, and it is not Becky Lynch, but instead it is Daniel Garcia, and he has fallen to the influence of Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson with his line of the entire show. Daniel, no, come on. The crowd chants, you sold out. And Daniel Garcia proceeds to take Darby Allin and places a chair on the mat. And he goes to curb stomp him, but misses the chair and just curb stomps him on the mat.
Yeah, this was unfortunate and very awkward because this was supposed to be Daniel Garcia's big spot after turning heel for the first time. And
I rewatched this. And because I watched it, it was like, he didn't even miss by a lot. It almost felt like, am I missing something here? Is he like, is this a warning shot to Darby
not? No.
Because I got my answer because they just redid the spot because it was so important for this angle that I had to curb stomp him on the chair. So they did it over again. But I don't know how this got mangled.
I think it's simply
attempt.
The mechanics of like what's happening here and that he has to pull the two arms up. And in shifting his body weight, one of the, like, he's kind of twirled him like a skateboard, basically. And, like, Darby, unfortunately, went out of position for the actual stomp itself. And there was this, like, very awkward moment of, like, you know, Moxley's, like, pacing around, like looking down and, like, he's thinking, what the fuck happened? You're supposed to stop him on the chair. And, like, these two had to have some sort of, like, nonverbal or verbal, you know, agreement to just do it again. They did it again. It was fine. And in all the replays, you will never see that.
You will never see this first one again. It would be my assumption here. So with that, he is then pulled. He continues to attack Darby, and Shafir and Moxley pull him off, and Garcia leaves with the Death Riders, executing the turn, which, I mean, I kind of liked what they did on Saturday where, like, everyone had been thinking, like, okay, he's turning. And the way they did it on Saturday was this idea that it's, like, they were going to add, like, much more layers to this than just your simple heel turn. And I just felt like we just raced to this. And it's like Saturday didn't even happen, which I guess, you know, they have set this up. It's not like this comes out of nowhere. I just thought they were going to be a little more. I thought this was going to be a lot more interesting to get to this spot than just, like, it just felt like they leapfrogged to he's joining the Death Riders so quickly.
I agree. Like, after what you saw on Saturday, I feel like they had at least, I don't know, maybe like 3 weeks, maybe two to three weeks more of story to really kind of like peak this thing, to really get the crowd to at least anticipate or think about what could happen. They did.
Or at the very least, like, you get into the head of Daniel Garcia of why this is, he's at this crossroads of his career that, like, he is justified in making this giant move. And I thought they were just kind of like scratching the surface there on Saturday, and boom, we get to the turn.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I thought the end result of this moment, like, in front of a crowd that I thought was very strong and very reactive to most things, but their reaction to this wasn't necessarily one of, like, I would say that much shock, nor did it feel like that big of an event coming out of the show after this. Some of that is due to the awkwardness of the missed curb stomp as well, sure, But by the end of it, I felt like they took this out of the oven a little too soon. And, you know, follow up is everything. Of course, you know, it could be something we'll be talking about very fondly maybe a month from now after, you know, he spent plenty of time with the Death Riders. But the immediate moments I have coming off of this show is that this didn't feel as big as I think it could have.
Yeah, like it would seem like a natural that the follow up to this is something with Matt Menard, whether, you know, he's got to lay out Matt Menard at the orders of the Death Riders or he does it on his own, something like that. And you could see that on Collision.
Like, shouldn't that have been the actual moment, you know, or like the turn on Nigel, which we all, you know, which they were kind of teasing on, what is it, Forbidden Door? Like either of those moments, I feel like would have been a much bigger, easier signifier than just him coming out here, pulling off the hood and attacking Darby Allin, which he has very little connection to.
Well, I'll say the turn tonight I thought was underwhelming. I might think differently depending on what they do on Collision, which is the show you'll get Nigel and presumably Menard on, and maybe they do have a good follow-up to this, but I would not say it was...
But the shock is gone by that point, right?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, you're... We'll see. But yeah, I found this to be an underwhelming turn at the end of the show.
Yeah.
And so ended a Dynamite that I would certainly say was not at the level of last week's Dynamite that I thought was a very good show, and even more so Collision, which I thought was a really excellent show on Saturday night. Tonight's show, you got a really great match with Hangman and Josh Alexander. The 5-on-5 was very strong. Yeah, Ricochet and Shelton I enjoyed. I would say like the two women's matches, I would say for different reasons. The tag match to me was a really disappointing match. And the hardcore match, I think it's left to like if you enjoy that type of match. I mean, they catered to that and the audience certainly got into kind of the hardcore spectacle of it.
Yeah, I thought it was a show that delivered like what you're looking for out of a Dynamite, and that it delivered pretty solid wrestling up and down the card. Like, solid to very good wrestling up and down the card. For me, I do continue to feel like the build to All Out has been lacking in comparison to the prior two pay-per-views, and the card itself at present time does feel lacking, certainly compared to the prior two pay-per-views too. Again,
this is one where it does feel like they are kind of a victim of this 4-week cycle where they're coming back so
quickly. A lot of time. And to me, for me, my criticisms are mainly about like the card itself. You know, for me, like Tony, usually say what you want about maybe the build, the card is usually very spectacular. This feels very much like a B show in comparison to maybe the prior two, which for All In might be unfair, but I mean, All Out has, you know, had pretty strong cards in the past. But they've also Brodito versus Bucks, you know, could be a really big one.
Yeah, they have 8 matches announced so far, with Copeland and Cage against FTR, Hurt Syndicate against Ricochet and Gates of Agony, Mercedes Moné and Riho, the Coffin match, Jon Moxley versus Darby Allin, MJF against Mark Briscoe, stipulation to be determined, Tony Storm, Jamie Hayter, Chris Statlander, Tekla for the women's title, Hangman against Kyle Fletcher, and then the 3-way match for the Unified Championship that will be set up over the next week. And a week from now, we will be starting an hour later because Dynamite is going, well, I should say it's September to Remember, with a 2-hour Dynamite and a 1-hour Collision.
Right.
Mm-hmm. From London, Ontario.
From London. Correct. Yep.
So we'll have plenty of time. Maybe we'll get an hour of the Riho story.
Maybe.
The road to All Out for Riho. Yep.
So next week will be a 3-hour show and we'll be live right after. At 11 and something.
Yep. Yes.
About the length of the Bubba the Love Sponge documentary.
Maybe we will watch it picture in picture next week. Maybe we can have September to Remember on one, and we'll have Video Killed the Radio Star on the other, and we can compare notes after.
We could, yeah. But even then, I don't think that will even come close to matching the length of this week's NWA podcast, which will be going live on Sunday here at youtube.com/postwrestling, where those guys, I'm sure, will be there for much longer than either of those things.
Could you watch September to Remember followed by the Bubba the Love Sponge documentary in less time than the NWA podcast will clock in at on Sunday night?
We shall see. We shall see. I mean, those guys put in a lot of time talking a lot about,
The Iron Men.
the Iron Man of post wrestling for sure, like podcasting deep into the night on Sunday. And they are going to give us enough content for the entire month in one sitting. So look for that 8 p.m. Eastern time at youtube.com/postwrestling.
All right, we're going to move on over to the forum. Thanks to everybody for listening to the review here on the YouTube channel. Dynamite Kid mistakes aside, and we will.
I hate bringing those up, John, because like it always tends.
No,
to be
you a, should be.
It I always tends mistakes. To be a little bit awkward because I know how much it bothers you to like to know that you made a mistake, but at the same time, if I don't mention it,
you have to.
Like we're all going to you know hear about it afterwards, right? So. Yeah, we kind of have to.
All right. I'm only saying this because of something I will tell you off air. That has nothing to do with Dynamite Kid, but separately. Oh, okay. we will join you on the forum. Maybe I'll tell everyone on the bonus.
Yeah.
On the other side. Sure. I won't. But anyway, we will chat with you then. And then we're back Friday night after SmackDown.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.